Yeah, you don't know nothing about that. That's before your time.
Before my time or before your time?
No, I lived it. You merely adopted it.
All right, Bane. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Herbal Synergy Stuff Shop. I'm your host, Inji. With me, Muzz, as always. I don't know where to start to say, but I fixed it. Don't worry about it. Herbie!
Thank you, though. What's up?
Caught me off guard that time.
You ain't got to get ready if you stay ready, my boy.
Bro, I am tired. I am so tired. I almost requested to do this tomorrow or something. But I feel like I'm going to be just as tired tomorrow, so let's just do it now.
You're always tired.
No. I'm extra tired. I mean the kind of tired where, like, you're ever falling asleep and, like, you think you're doing something, but in reality your eyes are closed?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought I was actually working at work, and, like, my eyes open, and I don't know what the hell is going on my computer. Huh, you're a class actor.
You're right. The classiest of acts.
You got a flavor this week, big guy?
Got absolutely no flavors. Not to pique my interest.
Yeah. At all.
Nothing. The worst in the week of history of stuff.
I mean, to those who are interested, Jujutsu Kaisen is back out with the next season. Jobless Reincarnate is out the next season. Bungo Stray Dogs is out with the next season.
Yeah, that's a good season.
I think Demon Slayer may have wrapped up its new season.
Yeah, Bungo is pretty good.
I don't think you watched that.
Really? Ask me something.
Who's the main character?
It's Tiger Boy.
All right, who's the favorite character?
My favorite character?
No, not your favorite character. The favorite character.
I don't know. Is it Dazai?
It is Dazai. Was the plot of the last season?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
But I could tell you they stopped the well from blowing up the whole city.
What was that, like season one or two?
I don't know, dog. You just said I ain't watching. I just proved you wrong, my guy.
Yeah, but you're not watching this new season.
It's not yet.
Shit.
Yeah.
And it don't stop.
But yeah, nah. Hey, Bungo has some good stuff.
I like Bungo.
Little zany, but you know.
With the brainy. I think Ranking of Kings has a new season. I'm gonna watch it.
Watch it, dog. You watch all the things.
Bro, Ranking of Kings season one gave me anxiety.
You give me anxiety.
It put me in like an emotional turmoil.
You don't even have emotions.
That was what was so great about it. It made me feel things that me and the people close to me were certain I couldn't feel. I was like, yo, what is this?
Like never felt before. Maybe not the usual. Yeah, you don't know nothing about that. That's before your time.
Before my time or before your time?
No, I lived it. You merely adopted it.
All right, Bane.
Well, yeah. Right, what are we going to start off with first here?
What would you like to start off with?
We can just do some Buddy Daddies, then do some Deep Insanity, then Aristocratos, and then finish up Jujutsu and Chojin, and then follow it up with Vinland. Yo, laid it out for you.
I took a lot of notes on both shows.
Oh, did you now?
Yeah, probably more notes than I'm going to take. The most notes I'm going to take for the remainder of these episodes. But I took a lot of notes on both. Thank you. I deserve that.
Daddy Buddies, Season 1, Episode 8. Nothing seek, nothing find. So this one, my boy Ray, he gets a summons to his father's house. And Mirei and Kazuki, they have a plan for Ray. And like, oh, hurry up and come back. Which we don't know what it is at this point. And so my girl Mirei wants to meet Papa Ray, Big Papa Ray, for some reason. And she it was calling him like diabolical. she do little kid stuff. So then he talks about Ray talks to his father about coming back up and doing this, and you know, Kazuki talks with Mirei about Ray's upbringing, how it was like a strict father and this, that, and the other. And Ray's father wants him to move back in the family house, you know, be part of family assassins. Ray's like, I don't really want to do that. And, you know, he wants to handle the business. And then his father asks him, have you found a place where you belong? And I'm like, yeah, with Mirei and Kazuki. But he doesn't say that. No, he don't say that. He like, no, I haven't found a place. I'm like, oh, okay, you liar. Yeah, you liar. And so then his father gives Ray a mission to kill a traitor. And so Ray receives the dossier with that creepy guy from the store that always be going in there looking for jobs. And yeah, I think that would look like him.
Damn, I guess that was him.
Yeah. And so then Ray questions, he's like, why would my teacher betray the organization? And then so as Ray Driver asks him, he's like, why do you kill? And then Ray's like, why do you kill? And the driver's like, oh, for curiosity.
Yo, that was wild.
Yeah, the whole analogy is like a car exists for someone to drive, money to make happiness, and like he's like essentially searching for a reason for being. And I'm like, oh, okay. And my man keeps a diary of the last words his victim says, which is kind of crazy.
Kind of, Irby? Kind of.
Just a wee bit.
Just a... Touché.
Yeah. So, yeah. And so he shows up, his mentor's there, and they start to fight. And he's like, Ray, why are you here? And then it's on site, start fighting. And they talk and he fights. And he's like, oh, I found something I want to protect. That's why I wanted to get out.
Man called him a liar. He's like, ah, you're all the same.
Yeah. He didn't change and this, that, and the other. And they're fighting and coming through. And like, yeah, the fight didn't make much sense to me. Like, there's bullets, but it's like hand-to-hand stuff. I'm like, why do y'all should have caught a bullet from somewhere?
I know.
So I was like, man, makes no sense right here. So then, man, it's about to fall to his death, and Ray tries to save him. And I think this is when he sees that Ray changed a little bit because he tried to save him. Yeah, they had a heartfelt conversation. Oh, no. So then Kazuki calls him up after the driver put the body into the van. But I think it was also messed up that they killed his girlfriend. That guy killed his girlfriend. I'm like, dang, she was innocent. She had to do that. Yeah, to kill her.
Well, did they actually say that they killed her?
They showed a photo of her tied up and bleeding.
Oh, and she was dead. Touché.
Slumped over. I was like, oh, man, they killed her. And he's like, oh, that's why she's not here yet. When he saw Ray, I was like, oh, man. Killed her.
Mm-hmm.
So Kazuki calls Ray. Ray's like, I'm not coming home right now. I just need to cool off. And the Kazuki comes, picks him up, and talk to him. You know, they have a couple heartfelt moments about the stuff he did and how he used to clean up Ray's apartment because he couldn't see him living like that anymore, and he cared for Ray. And meanwhile, Mirei is at home asleep by herself without a babysitter.
again.
No telling what could happen to her.
Katsuki is just a terrible parental figure.
He better than Ray, though.
Ray, listen. Ray may accept this child, but Ray never said he wanted this child. He wanted a cat.
It gotta be like that.
A self-sufficient cat.
Yeah. So then they celebrate Ray's birthday. And at the end of the episode, the driver guy comes back in. And he's like, oh, he talks to Q. And he's like, oh, you must have done something real well to get in the boss's favor. And this and the other. And he's like, oh, here's an information request for these two. And it's a photo of Mirei and Katsuki. And I'm like, oh, man.
Yep. So it seems like midway through the season, we're going to get some meaningful story.
Finally. I'd ready to pull the plug on both.
Bro. I think after these two shows, after your two shows, because we're still within this new rule that I'm proposing to you, I think we should have a 3-episode rule.
Nah.
If it don't capture our interest in 3 episodes, we got to nix it.
Well, we always had that rule anyway.
Yeah, but I forgot what I held on to that like wasn't worth holding on to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So.
All right.
Continue.
So I'm guessing it's my go.
Yeah.
Deep
tattoo.
Deep Insanity, Episode 1, Take 1. So a bunch of people pulled up to this dead-looking body, and it transformed into something they called Scarids. And apparently it had a disease called the Randolph Syndrome. Now, what the Randolph Syndrome is, there's this underground world that opened up under the North Pole, filled with blizzard creatures unknown to the Earth, and they named the place the Asylum. The asylum is filled with these creatures, and I guess you need a certain type of tolerance to the environment down there, or you could end up with Randolph Syndrome and turn into a Scarid. By the end of this episode, I had more questions as far as, like, concerning plot holes, maybe? Or just, like, overall, just, like, red flag. Like, almost like how we went over the red flag that Kisaki... I always forget Blondie's name and Buddy Daddy's. Kisaki?
Kazuki.
Kazuki had a tracker in Ray's phone, like, all along. Red flag.
Yeah.
But once we get the short introduction into the asylum, which, by the way, already moving faster than the Aristocrats, Mr. Kean. We get introduced to Leslie and Vera, who apparently are working for Antarctica Front. And you see a commercial of, like, them trying to recruit people to explore and be heroes. And that's when we get introduced to our main character, Shigure. Shigure is volunteering to be a sleeper because he wants to be a hero. Now, we don't know what a sleeper is right now, but that's what we're left with. And apparently when we get into this meeting room and they approve of Shigure, this group of people let it known that they're attracting a lot of wannabe heroes due to the commercial that Leslie didn't like. Now, the people in that table was Nicholas Kruger, the strategic command commander. That I didn't get, saying command twice. Solvig Sveen Grossbar, the branch chief. Muchiki, those were the two that their names actually got introduced. And then Leslie came in. We found out Leslie was the Platoon 11 executive officer, and Vera, we find out he's the Platoon 11 commander. They call Vera in, and they call Vera in and explain that she's getting the new guy, and like, they have some experience, and like, it's about experience as the other ones were. And there's like, it's, what if he dies? Nah, it's up to him to stay alive. So these people really have no value for the human life. They're kind of just like, it's a body. But later on, we're going to see why they shouldn't have that mindset.
Now, is it really a mindset, or is it really something like, you either get the job done or you won't? And those that don't get the job done are going to have to get out of there.
Yeah, but like, that's also terrible for like this specific situation because of what happens to the other rookie later on. So we'll get there. We get introduced to our main character's new crew, which is Leslie and Vera, who we already met, Muchika Sumire, the Platoon 11 sanity anchor, Lawrence Larry Jackson, the a sleeper, and Kabato Reika, another sleeper. They're talking amongst themselves about the new guy, and said they had 8 new guys in the last 10 months, and they all ended up the same, dead. But Larry was pretty positive about welcoming Shigure, and as soon as he opened the door, he introduced himself. He was like, hey, it's me. I'm supposed to be working with you guys. Larry opens the door, and boom, hits my man with a confetti gun in the face. And at first, I thought that Shigure didn't even flinch. Turned out his heart stopped, and he wasn't really breathing. At this point, Shigure wakes up to Leslie speaking and explaining what's going on, and says sleepers research, investigate, and recover new resources found in an asylum. The rules are there is no hope here, so have no hope. You're responsible for yourself. People who want to die are a burden on others. Never hesitate to execute an order. And there's one more, but we didn't get into that because it was time to go out on the job. And at this point, Leslie calls himself a lady, so I was a little confused as to like the gender of Leslie, but I guess that doesn't really matter. Then we go on to proceed. Like, I highlighted all like the information that seemed like important. They mentioned that like they believe Skerids are animals similar to the ones above ground but mutated. And then with all that and a pep talk, they gave Shigure practically nothing but a gun and then expected him to be useful during an expedition. No training, no nothing. Like, and at this point, I'm like, bro, this isn't an isekai. Like, this nigga's going to need some training or something. Y'all trying to kill him. But They got approached by Skerid, and like they had a plan, but Leslie pretty much took care of it by himself with a glowing red sword. And once they disposed of that, you know, Shigure was in his fields and talking about like he didn't really do anything. But then it was a commotion nearby, and it turns out one of the new recruits turned into a Skerid, had like got the Randolph syndrome. And he wiped out his entire squad. Now, this is what I mean by, like, yo, just allowing anyone to join when there's, like, clearly this isn't for everyone. So why would you let anyone? Like, I get these are randoms because they had, like, troopers equipment, like the Star Wars freaking guy. I never watched Star Wars, but it was the only thing I could think of. And they all died immediately, but, like, for a place that could turn people into scarers if they don't have like the necessary DNA or whatever you may call it, you'd think the test to get in would be a little more strict. Or is it me?
I mean, they could just be running out of bodies to fight the people. When draft numbers get low, numbers for war get low, they draft people to fight. So that could be it.
I mean, I get that and all, but like, as we just saw, they may have been 8 people with that rookie, and now they're down 8 people. So yeah. If it's bringing people on board for the sake of having numbers, it's counterproductive. You're helping kill people on your end. But they rush over to assess and control the situation. My man Larry and Kabato get knocked out pretty quickly. And here's the thing that like got me a little like, hold on, what? My man Shigure out of nowhere was just like, nah, I got this, and was whipping out shit as if he's done it more than once. And like, he was really acting like he was about to do something. And Leslie even said that, oh, I'll leave it to you then. But Leslie still finished off the thing.
Yeah.
Plus, my man was gassed in like a minute. So, once they did all that, Shigure was just like, what about the final rule? And then Leslie was like, oh, you already did it. The final rule is possessing and accepting the fear of death for yourself and killing others. And like, at the end of it, we learned that Shigure is risking his life because the person who did the commercial is his favorite voice actor. Mm-hmm. And that was episode one. Which, yeah. You know, I had a couple questions as far as like, does this really make sense? But other than that, like, I didn't think it was a bad episode. I don't know where something like this is going to carry us with the plot, but with the story, but we'll see.
Maybe, maybe not. All right. Well, we're going to get into the Aversocrats' otherworldly adventures. Serving gods who went too far. Welcome to my off the charts mansion, season 1, episode 5. Some man Kyan receives his key to his mansion. It's a rundown mansion. It looks terrible. So let's see. Yeah, it was terrible. My man cleaned it up in a flash. So then the maids show up. They're like, oh, we're ready to clean and service and this, that, and the other. It's spotless, immaculate, clean. And so they have nothing to do. So then we flash to his brothers are back in town. So he has to go back to town. And they're talking. And they're like, oh, we can't wait to see your mansion. And then his dad's like, oh, didn't you get that so-and-so rundown mansion over there? He's like, it was decrepit the last time I saw it. And so, yeah, they come back to the house, they visit, like, man, this place is really nice, it's immaculate. And then his father asks, where's your art at, my boy? And he's like, he even was like, yeah, you can even have mounted animals up there, or whatever. Like, oh, that's nice.
Should have never said that,
yep. So then my boy Ken goes out and he puts up something and they say, you know, all the workers are screaming, there's a monster loose in here. And it turns out it's the red dragon that he slayed. And it's a calamity class monster. And like, I think he said like 5 A rank adventurers couldn't slay it by themselves. So It's like, huh? And it's also worth a thousand platinum coins.
Who would have thunk?
Yeah, I'm like, huh? He's like, I did it. He told his father, I did it when I was playing in the woods the other time, and I caught it and did some other stuff. I'm like, oh, okay, my guy. So then his mother and sister go to the bathroom, and then they're like, oh, what is this contraption that sprays the water? And they're like, oh, you got to simply try this, father. And so his father tries. He's like, oh. And essentially, he created a bidet. And so.
Yes. And the people are infatuated with the bidet.
Yeah. And then so, did you notice? You still watching in sub?
I'm watching in dub.
Did you notice the butler's voice?
I think I did, but I forget.
It's Meg Ronalds.
Oh no, I didn't. I think I watched that in sub.
Yeah, but it's his voice. I was like, oh hey, I know that voice. Meg Ronalds.
I just can't get away from Meg Ronalds.
Yeah. So then it starts off, they send out invitations to the king because the king tells them we got to throw a party, a shindig. So they send out invitations for it, and the king calls up Kian, and he's like, oh, where's my invitation? Da-da-da-da-da. And he was sad because he didn't get one, because you're only allowed to invite nobles that are like two or three levels above you.
But the king should have known that.
He did know that, but he thought because he was going to marry his daughter that he would get an invite anyway. And so,
for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So then Kian shows up. He's like, oh, I thought it was better to give you your invite in person as you are your highness. And so he whips it out. I'm like, ha. Huh. And then he's like, good thing. My brother told me to prepare for the king. And now everyone at the mansion has to get prepared for the king to come through because it changes the level of grandiosity that has to take place. And yeah, so he makes bubbling drinks, which is like cider, I feel like, or sparkling water. And then he makes fancy glasses. And so then the king arrives and he tried out the drink and he's like, I love this. And this, that, and the other. And then Mr. Marquis Go Geo, he shows up, you know, the evil guy. He's like, oh, this is such... Hmm?
I wonder how accurate it is for, like, that time frame that, like, you can't have anyone arrive later than the king. Like, I'd figure the king might be the first to arrive. But, like, actually, now that I think about it, it makes sense that it's the last. So, like, everyone could, at the same time, pay their respects, I guess.
Be in position to bow to the king.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, so, the king tries all the stuff. He loves it. Get the glass. Marquis, he gets scared by the red dragon in there. And it's like, oh, it's just a stuffed dragon. He's just a whole jerk. He shows up. He insults the food. He insults everyone. The king is also away trying the bidet that he loves. And he told Kian that he should install one in the royal capital, like, tomorrow.
Immediately.
In his palace.
And will not stand for this betrayal.
Yeah. And so while Marquis is talking his smack, the king surprises him. And he acts like a little
bitch.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think of a different word. But yeah, he does that, and then he gets reprimanded, and he runs away with his tail between his legs. So that was that one. Looks like they try to heat up, but they just don't want to heat up enough.
Yeah. So. I was expecting something like demons to attack or something at some point. You know, something to, like, would incite to actually use this man's OP power.
Yeah.
But
it's like they're gonna wait till the end of the season for it to get good.
Yeah. Yeah, wait, stick around to season two, that's when it gets good.
Yeah, nah, you lost me.
Yeah, I think you're gonna keep Irby with season two.
I mean, I'm gonna
struggle through One Piece.
Play. No, I died through One Piece. I had to use the Dragon Balls to bring me back to keep watching it.
Tis, tis, tis.
Hey, so that's how it be, dog. All
right, so I'll be honest here. I did read both Chojin and Jujutsu, but I retained none of it. Chojin was just I can give you a breakdown of Chojin so you can do Jujutsu. All right, so this chapter of Chojin, there wasn't much. It was.
What do you mean it wasn't much?
It wasn't much to me.
Not much. See, you don't think much of anything anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's losing my interest, so maybe that's why it wasn't much to me.
You're losing my interest.
I mean, if you want to talk about it, because
go ahead. Go ahead.
Nah.
I'll fill in the gaps.
You're going to have to fill in a lot of gaps.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm straight up just going to say it was Tokyo trying to convince everyone to change their plan and that they shouldn't be doing two unknown things at once and should take their time and or at the very least split up the teams and have one figure this out and one figure that out. And Tokyo, they at the very end, they asked him, well, how much time would you need for this to happen? It's like, let me do it. I'll find it with a 4-man squad. Give me a month. And they're like, you got 2 weeks. And he was like, I'll do it. And then the next thing I retained was Tokyo flying around looking for the poppy fields.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
56 pages.
One of the keepers was mad Tokyo was trying to change the whole plan. And so they're like, yeah, you know, we're stronger than we were a year ago. And they're like, oh, he's like, yeah, so are they. So, yeah, then Tokyo does his whole big board thing of mixing people up. Not mixing people up, but the strings and who's who and the abilities. And he's like, oh, yeah, I know this one and this one, this one, that one, but I don't know this guy. And then so Mopey Sword Guy comes in and tells him all about the new age chimeras, about how they steal body parts that contains abilities and they use them. But they're not all the same abilities. Then, let's see. Yeah. Then I liked how Tokyo used pigeons as his scouts.
Yeah, it's smart. And,
yeah.
But he can straight up talk to. Is it just birds?
Yes, birds.
Oh, I thought it was. Wasn't he talking to squirrels at some point in the beginning?
I don't think so. I'm not sure.
I gotta look into that. It might have been birds. It might have been like some pigeons he talked to at first.
Yeah, he could always talk to pigeons.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then at the end, the Noah man wants the science experimenting Chojin to create to test the vials on that turned humans into Chojins. So I was like, yeah, okay. And then on to Jujutsu Kaisen, episode 228. So, old man Gojo made a big barrier, and he shrunk it to the size of a basketball. But I thought this was interesting because they were like, oh, the barrier may look small, but it could be big on the inside. And he got this idea from the prison realm he was trapped in. And essentially, escape is rare in a barrier. Because the dimension area is like unknown. So like, even though it's small on outside, on the inside, it could be massive depending on the scale.
Mm-hmm.
Then they talk about Gojo changing his conditions each time and how like that's unheard of. And it's like not something that's really new. Yeah, and they talk about the precise blending's hard. And Higuromo and Hakure, we found out that their domains come with their own curse techniques. So, like, they go hand in hand. Yeah, simultaneous. And then we find out that Tsukuno destroyed Gojo's domain, and Gojo damaged Tsukuno. I was like, oh, almost a double knockout. Yeah, and then we find out that Tsukuna is actually a cursed object. And then Gojo talks about a Mahoranji technique, which they may have mentioned it earlier, but I forget what it is. So I'm just going to keep on moving.
Well, apparently it's Megumi's technique that Gojo thought Tsukuna would use, but I guess Gojo is assuming that Tsukuna is assuming that Gojo knows how to take it out in one hit.
Yeah. Who knows? I don't know. I'm waiting for just it's getting hot, baby.
Jujutsu's been a lot of information dumping.
Yeah, I like the information. I like to learn new things.
It's hard to keep up with it for me.
Yeah. Interesting.
Instead of enjoying the fight, I'm trying to learn how the fight's possible. And it's like, it shouldn't be possible. But he's doing it, so clearly it's possible. I'm like, what the?
That's the best part.
It's like, But, was that the end of Jujutsu?
Yeah.
All right, moving on to Vinland Saga. Episode 1. Pete might be happy that we're finally watching this one. Episode 1, Somewhere Not Here. I was interested in this episode. I'm going to be honest, guys. There's not much to, like, take from on this episode. It's not a bad episode. It's just it's like a build-up. It's building up. We're building up to the story. So, Somewhere Not Here. Thor's was freaking slaying. He was killing people nonstop. And he was with his boy, Thorkell. And he was with his boy Thorkell, and they mentioned some guy named Floki. And Thor's was just going from ship to ship, killing hella people. Boom, sword, this, damn, bow and arrow. For some reason, he got distracted. He was spacing out, and he got hit by an arrow. And the guy brought him underwater and was choking him, I believe. But Thor's somehow got out of it and like stabbed him with his own sword and then looked at it and threw it down with his descending body, which... The guy died, so shouldn't he have floated up?
I mean, if he's wearing armor, he would go down.
Was he wearing armor? I can't remember. But
might have chainmail on the inside.
Is Vinland an actual like place in the world?
I don't think so.
Okay, because they're mixing in like actual places in the world, but. Okay. So he stabs dude underwater and boom, they had this epic battle. I don't really know who won, who lost, but then it said Somewhere Not Here, which threw me for a loop. But we see Thorfinn, who's gonna be the main character. What the hell was that? Excuse me one moment. I think my cat just attacked the door. All right. So we see Thorfinn, and he's working out, and my man is going to have that farmer strength. Dude sailed a stormy sea until they found a new continent named Villain. And they are currently in Iceland, and Leif is telling this story, by the way, who, the way he was telling the story, you'd think he found Vinland, but why is he coming back and forth? Like, why hasn't he led them to Vinland? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, so, and then when he's telling the story, he mentions a monster called the Jormungand. And it's supposed to, apparently, like, one of the kids don't believe him because he says, my grandfather says that Jormungand lives in the West and there's nothing beyond the West, so you can't be telling the truth. And Thorfinn, who was, like, all in the story, was just like, he's got a point. You know what? You're not really a warrior. So, like my dad's a warrior, and you're not really a warrior, so... All the kids turned on Leif. Now, at this point, I'm like, is Finland a real place? Because I know Iceland is real. And they mentioned Iceland being, like, grassy, and Greenland's real, and Greenland being icy, which is all true, as in terms of the actual places. So, I'm curious. I should have looked it up, but I don't think Finland's real.
Apparently, it's just like there's no exact known location, but there's a location to the west, and let's say it may be some point in Canada.
Oh, did you just look it up?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So it's not more mind-blowing that the place exists. It's more mind-blowing that there's no exact location to this place. Like, does it can move on its own?
How
is there no pinpoint location on this?
Well, it's like one of those ones that, the Assassin's Creed game was like that, where it was like, oh, there was like evidence that something was somewhere at one point, but they just didn't have it. So, yeah.
All right, so maybe this show, well, the location in this show is just based on the legend,
the idea, a villain. Yeah.
So someone was interested enough in a place to make revolve their story around it.
Yeah.
All right. So Thorfinn was dreaming about sailing to Vinland, and then he gets a kraken? The Jormungand. He dreams about the Jormungand grabbing him around his waist, and what it actually was his sister snuggling up against him. And he got irritated. It was like, nah, come on, man. I warmed up this bed. What are you doing? Ilva is her name. And his mom's name is Helga.
Yeah.
And he overheard his father and Leif still talking. So he was getting curious about what they were talking about. But he was like, that's adult talk. Stay out of it. Just come sleep with your adorable sister or something like that. And apparently Helga isn't doing, her health is declining, so she can't do all the labor she was doing today. And they live in Greenland, by the way, so like the snowy days are, I guess, getting harsh on them. Like, it seems like they have to routinely clear off all the snow above the house. And Ilva asked Thors if they can get a slave and be normal, and I guess my man has a policy against slavery. But she fell off the roof, and lo and behold, she landed and found herself a damn near frozen to death slave. And we go over to Leif, who was trying to explain to Thorfinn how the sea is a very scary place, and that's what makes him a warrior. Like, just getting across the sea on its own is a job for a warrior in itself. And how one time he got stranded in a very icy part of the ocean, and like they had to abandon the ship because it got destroyed, and walk across ice and eat ice to satiate their hunger until it was only just him left. Everyone died, and he made it to land. And then, like, Leif is also explaining that his ancestors are from Norway, but some dude named Harald showed up and basically gave the people an ultimatum, like, submit to him or leave. And they decided to leave. And that's when Thorfinn got pissed at Leif and was like, my dad and his ancestors would never run away. I'm like, bro, you like five. Relax.
Like five. Relax.
The slave ended up coming from, we learned when he woke up, he came from Halfdan, who lives on the other side of the mountains. And
so I actually want to talk about, no wait, you said he woke up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I actually want to talk about that, because I was like, man, how is he doing like chest presses? Because that wasn't a thing until the 17th century.
Well, do we know what year it is?
It's 1987. What is 987?
Oh, 987.
Yeah.
There's not a... See, this is why I don't want to, like, base my story on, like, real stuff. Because you have to fact check things sometimes. You know what I mean? And that's just like, you're always going to get that person that notices something. I was like, hey, dog, okay. I don't fucking know. I just wrote it. You don't want to... Yeah. I feel like it's not a good enough reason. Like, if you're going to put it in there, you should do the research on it. If you're going to make it this year, you should do the research on it. Like, Greenland and Iceland are still very much livable. You could have made it a current thing, and then that wouldn't have been something my co-host here pointed out. And I was like, oh, yeah.
They might be... I think the winters may have been harsher back in the day, but like it all switches up. Mm-hmm. Some winters it's harsh, but it all depends. But yeah, chest compressions weren't a thing until I think it was like 1840 or something. I know it was the 17th century because one did the chest compressions and the other one did the mouth to mouth, and I was like, gotta look up chest compressions.
And so, realistically speaking, that man should have been dead. There was no way you should have brought him back. He ran away in bare feet, hardly any clothes, and chains, all the way from the other side of the mountains. Now, I'm not...
Cryogenesis. That's why he did it.
I'm not like some genius or anything, but like... When Harald shows up later on for him, they came on boats. That means the distance between their territory, their territory and our territory was far enough that they decided it ain't worth walking. Let's take boats. And this man walked from point A to point B, slept under snow the entire night and partial the morning. And was resuscitated.
Yeah.
That is wild. But. So the slave wakes up. And he explained he's from Halfdan's side on the other mountains. You know. He says he doesn't want to go back. Don't send them back. Halfdan shows up for the slave. And, like, he's starting a problem, and it's getting heated. Apparently, they had a fight back in the day, and there might have been some sort of agreement between the two crews, but the one guy on Harald's side, Halfdan's side, these names are messing me up. The one guy on Halfdan's side was picking a fight on one dude on our side, and apparently they fought last time, and the dude on our side took his arm.
Yeah.
Right? And they were about to go at it, but Halfdan used his chains, wrapped it around his dude's face, and, like, scarred him up. And was like, there will be no one breaking the law. The law is meant to be in place. And he also came saying some crazy shit, like, the best jewelry that belongs on man is a chain. I was like, whoa.
Yeah. Wow.
Whoa. But He may seem like a piece of shit, but at least he's a piece of shit with like standards. Like he has a line, and no one better cross that line.
Habitual line stepper.
Yes, but Halfdan finds his way to Thor's house. He finds the slave, and he's like, "I'll be taking that guy back." For whatever reason, Thor took pity on him, didn't want to give him back, so he was like, "I'll give you 3 goats. Name your price, blah, blah, blah." Halfdan eventually said 8 goats. It's like, fine, 8 baby goats. And I was like, that, again, not a genius, but this man, he don't look like he got much life left in him. And you're trading away resources that seem very valuable at this time of year. Or this period in Greenland. But they made a deal. Halfdan said he's going to pick the goats or sheep, whatever, himself. And the very next, so like as soon as he left, the dude died. And Evo's crying because they traded away 8 freaking sheep for a guy who just died right after.
Yeah, which is smart.
Then we have a scene of a guy on a ship towards the end, and I was wondering if it was Thorkell. Like, did Thorkell and Thor's have a falling out or something? I want to know what's going on.
Who knows?
So, yeah, like I said, there wasn't much there to, like, pick apart, but, like, it was still an interesting enough first episode to me.
Yeah.
And also, like I said earlier, I wrote a lot more notes on these 2 episodes.
Yeah, so it might be something for you, dog.
Nah, I was just, I don't know. I feel like the first episode's like saw an episode I really need to like pay attention to and write things down and get like the concept of what's going on and what seems important. What, you know what I mean? I don't know. Or maybe I'm writing. I don't know. We'll see.
Who knows?
It ain't easy to turn over a new leaf.
Just keep your old leaf.
Do it. But anything you want to talk about, Irby?
Nothing too much.
Did I say Bleach, the second half of Bleach started up again?
You talk about Jujutsu, you didn't say anything about Bleach.
Oh, yeah, Bleach too. Bleach as well, guys. Bleach is ramping up. First episode of the second half of the season came out less than a week ago. Or a week ago, depending on when this episode gets published.
It's all good just a week ago.
Anything you want to talk about, Irby?
Nope. Got nothing, my guy.
All right. Well, ladies and gents, our fellow anime watchers, manga readers, hope you enjoyed this episode. It was fun while it lasted. Like, comment, subscribe, all that snazzy jazz, and we'll catch you next week. Peace.
Peace.